Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You're watching a Highwire Media podcast.
The attempted assassination of President Ronald Reagan on March 30th, 1981 has become one of the most iconic and unsettling moments in modern American history. The footage still plays with eerie clarity, a young man standing quietly among a cluster of onlookers outside the Washington Hilton, the brief flash of a revolver, the crack of six rapid shots, the chaos erupting in seconds as bodies fall and Secret Service agents launch into action. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Fastest VPN, because if you're online in 2025 without a VPN, that's basically the digital equivalent of leaving your front door wide open with a neon sign that says, "Come on in." Well, the good news is, Fastest VPN fixes that instantly. Gives you military-grade encryption, zero logging, and a blazing fast connection that keeps your browsing private, whether you're streaming, research, or diving into those late-night true crime rabbit holes. Because trust me, I don't want the government to know that I'm watching these true crime episodes and make them come knocking on my door. But it blocks trackers, stops ads, and gives your data a suit of armor. And right now, they're running a ridiculous lifetime deal. You can save 93% and only pay $40, billed once for lifetime access. No renewals, no subscriptions, no, "Oh hey, we gotta charge you again." Just pay $40 once and you're protected forever. So what do you get for that 40 bucks? More than you can get anywhere else. You get unlimited bandwidth, 10 multi-logins, global server access, built-in malware and ad blocking, and lifetime encryption and privacy. If you want permanent protection for the price of a dinner, hit the link below and lock in Fastest VPN's lifetime plan. Stay private, stay secure, stay fast, and sign up for Fastest VPN. It is a scene replayed endlessly on television and analyzed in countless documentaries. But even now, the question that surrounded the event from the first moment remains the same. Why did John Hinckley Jr. do it? There was no manifesto, no political affiliation, no ideological motive, no radicalization trail, no coherent explanation in the traditional sense. Instead, the truth behind the shots fired that day traces a long and deeply troubling psychological descent, one marked by isolation, delusion, cinematic influence, and a parasocial obsession with a young actress who never knew the man whose fantasies centered on her. Hinckley didn't attempt to kill the president because he despised him. He didn't do it for attention from the nation. He didn't do it for policy or ideology. He did it because he believed in the distorted logic of his unraveling mind, that the act would impress Jodie Foster. Tonight, we're going to explore the long descent that led to that moment, not as a sensationalized true crime spectacle, but as a psychological narrative. To understand Hinckley's actions, one must step inside the emotional, cultural, and historical context that shaped him. His story is not simple. It's not linear. It's not the story of one bad decision. It is the story of a gradual unraveling, a man who slipped further and further from reality, while the world around him misunderstood the warning signs. The path to March 30th, 1981 did not begin with a gun. It began with loneliness. John Warnock Hinckley Jr. was born on May 29th, 1955 into a wealthy and socially respected oil family. His father, John Sr., was a successful businessman who built a thriving energy company. His mother was a devoted homemaker known for her involvement in church and community. The family moved from Oklahoma to Dallas and later to Evergreen, Colorado, places associated with privilege, opportunity, and upward mobility. To anyone on the outside, Hinckley's childhood was the picture of stability. He had financial security, a strong family structure, a good education, and the opportunities one might expect to launch a successful life. But emotional stability and economic stability are not the same thing. And in Hinckley's case, wealth disguised deeper issues. As a child, Hinckley was quiet, reserved, hesitant, and prone to retreating inward. His siblings, both older and more socially confident, seemed effortlessly attuned to the world around them. Compared to them, Hinckley often appeared overshadowed, lacking the easy social grace that came naturally to his brother and sister. His position as the youngest child reinforced a sense of inadequacy and dependency. When older siblings blaze ahead in life, the youngest often feels perpetually behind, frozen in a childlike role that becomes difficult to escape emotionally. His parents saw him as sensitive, shy, perhaps overly introverted, but not in any way dangerous. In the 50s and 60s, mental health concerns in children were often misunderstood or dismissed, especially in upper middle class families determined to project competence and respectability. The idea of a child suffering from chronic depression, personality disorders, or early delusional thinking was rarely recognized or addressed early. As long as Hinckley behaved politely, did well enough in school, and avoided trouble, adults had no reason to probe deeper. Hinckley's internal world, meanwhile, grew more fragile each year. He felt socially inferior, but couldn't articulate it. He avoided conflict, but internalized every perceived failure. He admired others from afar, but rarely made the first move to connect. His dreaming nature, which might have been nurtured under different circumstances, remained unsupported and unchecked. Psychologists later noted that Hinckley developed a pattern of quiet maladjustment, a state in which a child outwardly follows expectations while inwardly accumulating anxiety, self-doubt, and emotional distress. Though his childhood looked comfortable, the emotional conditions for psychological unraveling were already present. Chronic loneliness, poor self-esteem, emotional avoidance, and a growing sense of detachment from peers. All they needed was time. By the age of 20, Hinckley had enrolled in Texas Tech University, but he felt directionless and unmotivated. The campus environment, which others found energizing, overwhelmed him. Large lecture halls, crowds of confident students, and the pressure to form friendships only deepened his sense of inadequacy. He drifted through classes without enthusiasm, avoided deep friendships, and increasingly withdrew into solitude. When he dropped out, it was not a dramatic act of rebellion, it was a quiet concession to the emptiness he carried. He then took a dramatic step that outwardly looked like ambition, a move to Los Angeles to become a songwriter. Many young adults make bold leaps when they feel stuck, imagining that a change in scenery will transform their identity. But the Los Angeles of the 1970s was a brutal city for a young man with no confidence, no connections, and no clear vision. The music industry did not embrace dreamers without talent or drive. Hinckley submitted demo tapes, but none were taken seriously. He wandered the city, alienated by the glamour and competition he saw everywhere. He saw musicians who exuded charisma and confidence, qualities he lacked and quietly envied. The gulf between who he wished he could be and who he felt he was grew wider by the day. His letters home were carefully composed, downplaying his failures and loneliness. He didn't tell his parents that he barely spoke to anyone. He didn't tell them that his writing was going nowhere, or that depression was creeping in like a slow-moving fog. He didn't tell them that he spent entire days isolated in the tiny apartment, feeling purposeless and weightless. And then he discovered cinema, not as a casual viewer, but as someone searching for an emotional anchor. Movies didn't merely entertain him, they offered structure. They offered heroes, plots, resolutions, the emotional clarity he lacked in his own life. Shame, loneliness, and inertia created a psychological vacuum, and into that vacuum flowed the story that would reshape his worldview. Martin Scorsese's Taxi Driver. When Hinckley saw Taxi Driver in 1976, the film struck him with an intensity he had never experienced. Travis Bickle, a lonely cab driver descending into violence, became less a character and more a reflection, a distorted mirror of Hinckley's own isolation. Travis Bickle was everything Hinckley felt, alone, angry, unseen, disconnected. Bickle's internal monologue, his resentment towards society, his feeling of being God's lonely man, resonated deeply with Hinckley's own sense of invisibility. He wasn't just watching a film. He was encountering someone whose psychological spiral felt eerily similar to his own. Most viewers saw the film as a cautionary tale, a portrait of alienation turning violent. Hinckley saw it as a roadmap. And then there was Jodie Foster. Foster's character Iris represented innocence and vulnerability, qualities Hinckley projected onto the real actress. The distance between actress and character blurred immediately. To Hinckley, Foster was not a performer. She was an emotional lifeline, a symbol, someone who in his mind needed rescuing, just as Bickle believed Iris needed rescuing. The film did not plant delusions. It simply gave a deteriorating mind a script. The fantasies Hinckley developed in the aftermath of the film became the scaffolding of his identity. He began identifying with Bickle so deeply that reality and fiction became interchangeable. He saw himself as a misunderstood outsider, destined for a dramatic act that would finally reveal his significance. The romanticized violence of the film shaped his worldview far more powerfully than anyone around him realized. Instead of seeing a tragic story, Hinckley saw destiny. By the late 1970s, Hinckley's obsession with Foster had grown into something pathological. When he learned Foster had enrolled at Yale University, he was electrified, not with excitement, but with a delusional conviction that fate was guiding him. He traveled to New Haven. He wandered the campus. He slipped letters under her dorm room door. He called her repeatedly. He watched her from a distance. For Foster, still a teenager, these were intrusions, frightening and unwanted. For Hinckley, they were signs of progress, evidence that he was drawing closer to the emotional connection he believed existed. Foster's silence only intensified the delusion. To a healthy mind, silence indicates disinterest. To a delusional mind, silence signifies complexity, a coded message, an unspoken bond, a cosmic pause before a moment of significance. Hinckley believed he had to perform a grand gesture to break the silence, a gesture worthy of cinema, a gesture.
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Worthy of Travis Bickle, and a gesture worthy of Jodie Foster. He wrote it plainly in his journal. I must do something that will bring me to her attention. That something began as suicide fantasies, then kidnapping fantasies, then fantasies of hijacking airplanes, then fantasies of political assassination. Each idea grew more dramatic, more symbolic, more detached from reality. He was no longer simply lost. He was now rewriting his identity within a self-authored delusional storyline. By 1979, Hinckley's mental health had sharply deteriorated. His journals from this period show spirals of depressive rumination. fantasies of heroism, and paranoid fears. Depression, suicidal ideation, and delusion filled his entries. He imagined conspiracies. He believed he was destined for greatness. He interpreted mundane events as divine signals. He had no stable friendships, no romantic relationships, no career trajectory. His identity hinged entirely on the fictional narrative he constructed around Foster. His parents attempted intervention. They paid for therapy. They suggested medication, but Hinckley resisted. He didn't see himself as someone with a mental illness. He saw himself as someone waiting for destiny to unfold. Psychologists later diagnosed him with a combination of major depressive disorder, delusional disorder, and dependent personality traits. But in real time, the signs were subtle, dispersed across cities, journal entries, and private moments his family never saw. Hinckley was collapsing internally, and the world around him had no idea. As Hinckley's delusions hardened, they fused with the idea of political violence. Assassination carried symbolic power and historical weight. It represented the kind of dramatic gesture he believed would break through every barrier. He began tracking presidential schedules. He bought firearms. He practiced shooting in his parents' home. He fantasized about reenacting the climactic scenes of Taxi Driver. He followed Jimmy Carter during the 1980 campaign, attending multiple events while armed with a revolver. His arrest in Nashville for carrying concealed weapons should have triggered deeper investigation. Instead, officials treated it as an isolated misdemeanor. The world had the chance to intervene and missed it. When Reagan won the 1980 election, Hinckley transferred his delusional mission to the newly elected president. Reagan was charismatic, iconic, and constantly on camera. Exactly the kind of figure whose death would generate global shockwaves. Hinckley incorporated Reagan into his fantasies, as if he were another character in his internal film. Reagan became the obstacle that must be removed, the symbol that must be struck down, the ultimate gesture that would force Jodie Foster to confront the magnitude of his devotion. In early 1981, his writing became increasingly unhinged. He wrote Foster a letter announcing his plan to commit a historic act. He believed that after the assassination attempt, she would reach out to him, finally recognizing him as the man who had sacrificed everything to prove his love. It was a dangerous fusion of romantic delusion, cinematic fantasy, and political symbolism. Reality was no longer part of the equation. And then came March 30th, 1981. The morning the assassination attempt was mundane. Reagan was scheduled to speak at the Washington Hilton, a location favored by the Secret Service because of its secure driveway. The atmosphere was normal, routine enough that the press pool barely paid attention. Hinckley woke with calm determination, not the tremor of a cold-blooded killer, but the eerie stillness of someone whose mind had convinced itself that destiny was unfolding exactly as planned. He checked his revolver, loaded with six Devastator rounds, and walked towards the Hilton with the posture of an ordinary bystander. He blended seamlessly into the crowd. No rage, no agitation, no ideological signs or shouting. He looked like a spectator. When Reagan exited the hotel, Hinckley stepped forward, raised the revolver, and fired six shots in 1.7 seconds. James Brady collapsed instantly. A police officer and a Secret Service agent fell next. A ricochet struck Reagan under the arm. Agents tackled Hinckley and pinned him against the wall. His expression remained eerily calm. Some described it as peaceful, even satisfied. He wasn't celebrating the violence. He was relieved the fantasy he had been constructing for years had finally taken physical form. In his eyes, the mission was complete. Now it was Jodie Foster's turn to respond. When investigators discovered the letter Hinckley wrote to Foster, the nation was stunned. He had not acted from ideology, but obsession. He didn't want to change government policy. He wanted to change his relationship with a woman who didn't know him. His motive was not political, but delusional. Rooted in parasocial attachment, cinematic identification, romantic fantasy, identity crisis, untreated mental illness, it shattered American assumptions about political violence. Historically, assassination attempts emerge from ideology, extremism, radicalization, or geopolitical motives. But Hinckley's motive forced the nation to confront something more unpredictable. A private fantasy can be more dangerous than a public ideology. The randomness terrified the public. How do you prevent political violence rooted not in movements, but in delusions? How do you anticipate a threat that has no ideological profile, no manifesto, no organization behind it? Hinckley forced America to reckon with the uncomfortable truth that personal delusion can be just as lethal as political extremism. The 1982 trial was a national spectacle. For weeks, jurors listened to psychiatrists debate whether Hinckley understood the nature of his actions. Prosecutors argued he planned the attack, tracked the president's schedule, and sought fame. They believe he acted with full awareness. The defense argued the opposite, that Hinckley was consumed by delusion, unable to grasp moral or psychological reality. They presented journals, therapy notes, and expert testimony describing his years-long descent into psychosis. The letter to Foster was the most damning evidence, not because of its content, because of its emotional tone. It was raw, confused, obsessive, and utterly detached from reality. When the jury returned a verdict of not guilty by reason of insanity, the nation erupted in outrage. The public felt cheated. Politicians felt cornered. Commentators accused the justice system of being too lenient. Congressional hearings began almost immediately. States across the country rewrote their insanity defense laws, shifting the burden of proof onto the defendants. The legal system changed permanently because of one man's delusions. The verdict exposed a deep cultural discomfort. Americans were far more willing to accept evil than insanity. Evil has motive, insanity has chaos. Hinckley spent more than three decades at St. Elizabeth's Hospital in Washington, D.C. His life became a regimented routine. Therapy, medication, monitored recreation, evaluations, supervised outings. Some days he showed clarity and remorse. Other days he regressed into patterns that alarmed staff. He sometimes wrote to celebrities, echoing past obsessions. He formed attachments to other patients. His progress was uneven, but over time, increasingly stable. By the early 2000s, Hinckley had made enough progress for the court to begin granting him limited freedoms. Supervised visits home, then unsupervised day trips, then extended stays with family. Then, in 2016, a federal judge granted him full-time release under strict conditions. Today, Hinckley lives quietly, barred from contacting anyone involved in his past obsessions or owning weapons. His life is ordinary, mundane, structured, monitored, a stark contrast to the violent fantasy that once defined him. John Hinckley Jr.'s attempt to assassinate President Reagan was not the result of political extremism, but of a deeply disturbed mind seeking identity, connection, and significance in all the wrong places. His story is a chilling lesson about the dangers of untreated mental illness, the seductive power of cinematic narratives for vulnerable individuals, and the unpredictable ways obsession can distort reality. Hinckley's descent was not sudden. It was slow, incremental, and often invisible. A childhood of quiet detachment, an adulthood of drifting, a mind unraveling in silence, a fantasy that grew stronger than reality. His story forces us to confront uncomfortable truths, that violence can emerge from loneliness, that delusion can mimic destiny, and that sometimes history is changed not by ideology, but by emptiness. And before we go, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Fastest VPN. Because if you're online in 2025 without a VPN, that's basically the digital equivalent of leaving your front door wide open with a neon sign that says, "Come on in." Fastest VPN fixes that instantly. They give you military-grade encryption, zero logging, and a blazing fast connection that keeps your browsing private, whether you're streaming, researching, or diving into those late-night true crime rabbit holes. It blocks trackers, stops ads, and gives your data a suit of armor. I keep getting that wrong. And right now, they're running a ridiculous lifetime special deal. You can save 93%. And instead of paying $600 like you normally would, $40 for lifetime access. That's one payment of $40, and you're protected forever. So, what do you get for $40? You're going to get unlimited bandwidth, 10 multi-logins, global server access, built-in malware and ad blocking, lifetime encryption and privacy. If you want permanent protection for the price of a dinner, hit the link below and lock in Fastest VPN's lifetime plan. Stay private, stay secure, stay fast. Excuse me. And with that, we'd like to thank you so much for watching and listening. If you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. As always, your support helps the channel grow, upgrade our equipment, bring new hosts, be able to pay them, and of course, take this show on the road. We'd love to do live episodes like from Washington, D.C. and the Washington Hilton, which you can see right there. We could do a full-on deep dive into Reagan's attempted assassination and go even further than what we just covered today. And your support can help make that happen. So with that, thank you so much for watching the season finale of True Crime Never Sleeps Show and the Fatal Fandom. Join us in January for an all-new season. Thank you so much. And of course, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and we will see you our next season, which begins in January. Thank you and take care.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.